From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
We do not torture.
The Washington Post reveals the existence of secret CIA-run prisons in Eastern Europe, but the paper agrees to a Pentagon request not to name the countries they're in. Does this make the Post a part of the cover-up? We'll speak with Peter Kornbluh of the National Security Archive and the reporter who first obtained flight logs of the so-called torture flights. But first, it was 1 year ago the U.S. laid siege to Fallujah. Did they use chemical weapons?
No, I do know that white phosphorus was used, which is definitely, without a shadow of a doubt, a chemical weapon.
We'll speak with a former U.S. Army specialist who was part of the Fallujah assault. We'll talk to the Pentagon in Baghdad. And in a U.S. exclusive, we are an excerpt of Italian Rai TV's Fallujah, The Hidden Massacre. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In France, curfews and emergency measures have been put in place in an effort to stop a two-week uprising led by immigrant and Muslim youths that began in the Paris suburbs. The civil unrest has now spread to over 300 towns and cities in France and even across the border to Brussels and Berlin. Last night, Prime Minister Dominique de Villepin appeared on national television to announce emergency powers would be invoked under a 50-year-old law. The curfew was first used in Algeria in an unsuccessful attempt to quell an insurrection at a time when the North African country was a French colony. Suburban youths quoted in the Le Parisien newspaper claimed the emergency measures, quote, won't change anything. One youth said, this isn't going to solve things. More repression means more destruction. More cops is just provocation. Earlier today, police announced nearly 1,200 cars were burnt overnight and 330 arrests made. In Panama Monday, President Bush responded to increasing criticism over the mistreatment of detainees overseas.
We are finding terrorists and bringing them to justice. We are gathering information about where the terrorists may be hiding. We are trying to disrupt their plots and plans. Anything we do to that effort, to that end, in this effort, any activity we conduct is within the law. We do not torture.
But President Bush refused to directly answer whether he would allow the Red Cross to have access to prisoners held by the CIA or whether he agreed with Vice President Cheney the CIA should be exempt from legislation to ban torture. On Capitol Hill, the Senate is preparing to vote as early as today on creating an independent commission to investigate prisoner abuse in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo. The U.S. Supreme Court announced Monday it'll decide whether the Bush administration can use military tribunals to try detainees held at Guantanamo Bay. In July, a three-judge federal appeals court upheld that a tribunal made up of entirely military officials could try and sentence Salim Ahmed Hamdan, a Yemeni man accused of being Osama bin Laden's bodyguard and driver. On Monday, Chief Justice John Roberts recused himself from the case, since he was one of the appeals court judges who previously ruled on the case. Meanwhile, the Pentagon filed war crimes charges against five more detainees at Guantanamo. Those charged include Omar Khadr, a Canadian citizen who's been held by the U.S. since he was 15 years old. Khadr's attorney, Munir Ahmad, protested Monday's decision, saying, quote, through torture, abuse, and 3 years of illegal detention, this government has robbed Omar of his youth. The fact that this administration has seen fit to designate a child for trial by military commission is abhorrent, he said. The Bush administration has refused to provide assurances they will not seek the death penalty against the child. Khadr was detained in Afghanistan allegedly after throwing a grenade that killed a U.S. soldier. The Pentagon has issued a new directive on the interrogation of prisoners held by U.S. soldiers. According to the New York Times, the directive prohibits, quote, acts of physical or mental torture. But the Times reports the Bush administration still hasn't decided whether to ban cruel and humiliating punishment. The new directive does not apply to CIA interrogators. Meanwhile, the military announced Monday five U.S. soldiers have been charged with punching and kicking detainees in Iraq. The beatings occurred 2 months ago. In Iraq, a major U.S.-led air and ground offensive along the Syrian border has entered its fourth day. U.S. warplanes have been firing Hellfire missiles and dropping 500-pound bombs. The U.S. military has said it's killed 36 people in the assault and claimed they were all insurgents. In Baghdad, four U.S. troops died Monday in a suicide car bombing. It was the deadliest suicide attack against U.S. forces in 4 months. In Mosul, an Iraqi newspaper journalist was shot and killed at an internet cafe. And in Washington, the Pentagon announced it'll likely keep at least 92,000 troops in Iraq through 2008. The Iranian government is claiming it has found the wreckage of two U.S. spy planes inside its borders. The planes reportedly crashed during the summer. Iran disclosed the find at the United Nations on Monday, where it accused the United States of breaking international law and violating its sovereignty. Earlier this year, Seymour Hersh of The New Yorker magazine reported the Pentagon has begun secretly sending forces in Iran to identify possible future military targets. The Wall Street Journal reports 17 months have passed. The Bush administration announced a full criminal inquiry into allegations that Iraqi exile Ahmed Chalabi leaked U.S. intelligence secrets to Iran. Since the FBI hasn't even interviewed Chalabi or any U.S. official connected to the matter, Chalabi is arriving in Washington today for his first official visit in 2 years. He's planning on speaking at the American Enterprise Institute Wednesday, and he'll be meeting with Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Treasury Secretary John Snow. In Australia, police have arrested 15 people, including a prominent Islamic cleric. They're accused of preparing to stage a, quote, catastrophic act of terrorism. But few details on the plot were released. The arrests come in dramatic fashion. More than 450 heavily armed officers backed by helicopters raided 20 homes across Sydney and Melbourne. One of the suspects was shot in the head. Police said he'd refused orders to stop. The Internal Revenue Service has warned one of Southern California's largest churches it could lose its tax-exempt status because a priest gave a sermon criticizing the Iraq War 2 days before last year's presidential election. The IRS has sent the All Saints Episcopal Church in Pasadena a warning that the federal tax code prohibits tax-exempt organizations, including churches, from intervening in political campaigns and elections. The IRS has issued warnings to other nonprofits, including the NAACP, for issuing statements deemed critical of the president. In news from Latin America, Alberto Fujimori, the former president of Peru, has been arrested. Peruvian officials said they're preparing to request his extradition to Peru, where he's wanted on 21 criminal charges alleging human rights violations and corruption. Fujimori has lived in Japan since his resignation in 2000. And today is Election Day in many parts of the United States. Voters in New Jersey and Virginia will be electing a new governor. In New York City, the mayoral race has pitted Mayor Michael Bloomberg against Fernando Ferrer. All three races have seen record amounts spent on the campaign. In New York, Bloomberg has shattered campaign finance records in a presidential race by spending up to $100 million on his reelection, 10 times what Ferrer has spent. In New Jersey, gubernatorial candidates U.S. Senator John Corzine and Republican Doug Forrester have spent a combined $70 million, making the priciest campaign in state history. And in Virginia, Republican Jerry Kilgore and Tim Kaine have spent a record $40 million. Voters will also be electing mayors in Atlanta, Boston, Detroit, Houston, Miami, Minneapolis, San Diego, Seattle, and other cities. And in California, voters will decide the fate of four ballot initiatives backed by Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. The initiatives deal with teacher tenure, union dues, budget cuts, and the state legislature's power to draw political boundaries. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today marks the one-year anniversary of the U.S. assault on the Sunni city of Fallujah. U.S. and Iraqi military forced out the town's residents, bombed hospitals and buildings, attacked whole neighborhoods, and denied entry to relief workers. 10,000 buildings were destroyed, thousands more seriously damaged. At least 100,000 residents were permanently displaced. Over 70 U.S. soldiers were killed. The Iraqi death toll is unknown. Independent journalist Dar Jamal was one of the few unembedded independent reporters in Iraq at the time. On our program, he first reported U.S. troops were using chemical weapons in Iraq. This is Dar Jamal speaking on Democracy Now! Just under a year ago.
I have interviewed many refugees over the last week coming out of Fallujah at different times from different locations within the city. The consistent stories that I've been getting have been refugees describing phosphorus weapons, horribly burned bodies, fires that burn on people when they touch these weapons, and they're unable to extinguish the fires even after dumping large amounts of water on the people. Many people are reporting cluster bombs as well, and these are coming from different camps that I've been to, different people who've emerged from Fallujah anywhere from 1 week ago up to on through up towards near the very beginning of the siege.
Independent journalist Dar Jamal appearing on Democracy Now! November 28, 2004. Almost a year after these allegations came to light, a new documentary claims to provide fresh evidence of the use of chemical weapons in Fallujah. The documentary is called Fallujah, The Hidden Massacre. It premieres today on the Italian television network Rai. In the film, eyewitnesses and ex-U.S. soldiers say white phosphorus bombs were used in Fallujah. Rai says this amounts to the illegal use of chemical weapons and says they were used indiscriminately and against civilian populations. In a North American broadcast exclusive, today we bring you an excerpt from the film. We'll then be joined by one of the filmmakers, one of the soldiers involved in the Fallujah siege, and we'll be joined by the Pentagon in Baghdad. The Pentagon denies the allegations it used chemical weapons in Iraq. First to the documentary Fallujah, The Hidden Massacre. It's by Siegfrieda Ranucci and Maurizio Torrealta, broadcast today on Rai Network.
I was personally involved with escorting a commander to Fallujah for Operation Phantom Fury. We were told going into Fallujah, into the combat area, that every single person that was walking, talking, breathing was an enemy combatant. As such, every single person that was walking down the street or in a house was a target.
Is it true that you had orders to shoot even children of 10 years old?
This is actually very interesting. When we first got to Iraq, the Army had a set standard for male combat ages. And I believe when we first got there, it was like 18 years old was the commonly perceived age of adulthood in the military. So a male who was 18 years old to 65 was technically capable of being inserted. By the time Fallujah rolled around, it was any male with an AK-47 or a gun or whatever was a military target. And I think that is true to a degree. I mean, it happened. There was many times where children as young as 10 were fighting.
What will you tell your child about the Battle of Fallujah?
It seemed like just a massive killing of Arabs. It looked like just a massive killing.
We weren't able to see anything of this mass killing. Information coming out of Fallujah is dangerous. The few who tried to show it know something about that. Iraqi police arrested two journalists from Al Arabiya last March, and their video cassettes were confiscated. The freelance journalist Enzo Baldoni, who was killed in Iraq, was working on Fallujah in the last few weeks, just like the manifesto journalist Juliana Skrena, who was kidnapped carrying out an inquiry into the refugees of the city. A suspicion arises as to whether the story of exporting democracy to Fallujah was meant to be told or not. Did you gather any particular information about Fallujah?
Not only in Fallujah, I had heard stories from the inhabitants about the use of certain weapons, like napalm, in Baghdad during the battle at the airport in April 2003. And then I had collected, just before going to interview the city refugees, testimonies from other inhabitants in Fallujah about the use of guns on white phosphorus. In particular, some women had tried to enter their homes and they had found a certain dust spread all all over the house. The Americans themselves had told them to clean their houses with detergents because that dust was very dangerous. In fact, they had some effects on their bodies, bleedings and very strange things. I would have liked to interview those persons, but unfortunately my kidnappers, who said to be part of Fallujah's resistance, have forbidden me to tell what I have known about Fallujah by kidnapping me. This war cannot have witnesses. It cannot have witnesses because it's based on lies. The Americans have permitted only to embedded journalists to go to Fallujah. Despite that, for example, the image of the Marine that shoots the wounded and unarmed warrior inside the Fallujah mosque has gone out. But exactly because this image has gone out, we do not know how, and because it has circulated all over the world, the NBC journalist that has recorded it has been immediately expelled from the embedded body.
Italian journalist Giuliana Screna. Screna drew international headlines when she was kidnapped in Iraq, only to have U.S. soldiers fire on her vehicle after she was released, injuring her and killing the Italian intelligence agent who had saved her. We are now going to go to the excerpt of the Rye documentary, where specialist Jeff Engelhart speaks. We want to warn our TV viewers that some of the scenes you are about to see are extremely graphic.
Were any chemical weapons used in Fallujah?
From the U.S. military? Yeah, absolutely. White phosphorus. Possibly napalm. May or may not have been used, I don't know. I do know that white phosphorus was used, which is definitely, without a shadow of a doubt, a chemical weapon.
Is he sure of it?
Yes. It happened.
How can he be certain?
Well, it comes across the radio as a general transmission. When it happens like that, you hear it on the radio. We have speakers in our trucks. Speakers, and then the transmission goes to the speakers, so it's audible. And as they say, in 5 mics, we're going to drop some Whiskey Pete. Roger, commenced bombing. I mean, it just comes across the radio, and like when you hear Whiskey Pete, that's the military slang.
Contrary to what was said by the U.S. State Department, white phosphorus was not used on the open field to illuminate enemy troops. For this, tracer was used. A rain of fire shot from U.S. helicopters on the city of Fallujah on the night of the 8th of November. That we will show you in this exceptional documentary, which proves that a chemical agent was used in a massive and indiscriminate way in districts of Fallujah. In the days that followed, U.S. satellite images showed Fallujah burnt out and razed to the ground.
The gases from the warhead, the white phosphorus, will disperse in a cloud. And when it makes contact with skin, then it's absolutely irreversible damage, burning flesh to the bone. It doesn't necessarily burn clothes, but it will burn the skin underneath clothes. And this is why protective masks do not help, because it will burn right through the mask, the rubber of the mask. It will manage to get inside your face. If you breathe it, it will blister your throat and your lungs till you suffocate, and then it will burn you from the inside. It basically reacts to skin, oxygen, and water. The only way to stop the burning is with wet mud, but at that point, it's just impossible to stop.
Have you seen the effects of these weapons?
Yes. Burned bodies. I mean, it burned children, it burned women. White phosphorus kills indiscriminately. It's a cloud that will, within most cases, 150 meters of impact, will disperse, and it will burn every human being or animal.
Some footage has shown violations inside mosques, black crosses painted on the walls and on the Quran. Do you know anything about this?
I don't doubt that American soldiers who are frustrated after being involved in combat for a year would have any problems with doing any kind of vandalism. I mean, it's very common. indiscriminate vandalism was found. I mean, there was carvings in the walls at Babylon, an ancient, you know, structure, a historical monument. It was common for soldiers to carve, you know, "Hello, Mom, I'm from Texas" on these walls. I just think there's a certain lack of respect within the American military ranks, especially when dealing with soldiers who are frustrated. I personally did not witness any mosque vandalism. Our brigade was good about keeping that very controlled. But I did hear stories, places such as Samarra, Baghdad, Mosul, mosques being attacked, mosques being vandalized, the Quran being damaged. I think it's very common.
Is it true that you waited for the results of elections, confirmation of victory for Bush, before bombing Fallujah?
I'm glad you brought this question up. That was definitely the case. That was, even in the ranks, in the military ranks, we knew what was going on. They told us that we were going to wait after the election, the American election, before going into Fallujah. And we had already set up the whole operation, like it was ready to go, and we were waiting for 2 or 3 days for this election to be over with. And then when the election was so close between Kerry and Bush, it was almost pissing off a lot of the high command, because they wanted to hurry up and get in there and get it going. And they didn't want what happened in 2000 with Gore and Bush, the long drawn out process that lasted almost a week to find out who won. When Kerry conceded, though, it was like within a matter of a day it was happening. And that was definitely the case. We waited till after the election. We were told directly from the Pentagon to wait until after the election before going into Fallujah, and that's exactly what we did.
Alice Mahon was a Labour parliamentarian from 1987 until a few months ago, until she decided to walk out on Westminster. Mrs. Mahon had, since 2003, put forward several parliamentary inquiries demanding information from the Defence Ministry as to whether the United States had used chemical weapons. And the Ministry, after several attempts to deny any knowledge, wrote back on the 13th of June 2005 with the following: "I regret to tell you that I am sincerely sorry that this is not the truth, and that now we must correct it. The USA destroyed their arsenal of napalm used in Vietnam in 2001, but, emerging from military reports from Marines in service in 2003, it shows that MK-77 was used. The incendiary bomb MK-77 does not have the same composition as napalm, but it has the same destructive effect. The Pentagon has informed us that these devices are not generally used in areas where civilians are present."
I didn't lose my seat. I deliberately stood down because I didn't want to be part of a government that was conducting an illegal and bloody war against people who'd done us no harm whatsoever. Well, I heard from the American military at the beginning of the war, at the beginning of the bombardment of Iraq, there was an admission by the American military that they'd used a substance similar to napalm when they first went into Iraq. I put the question down, and as you can see, the reply was no, they hadn't, or they were not. My government were not aware of it. Now, I'm afraid some of us do not believe everything we're told at the moment, and so I did pursue it, even when I stood down from Parliament, and months later, we did get an admission from the Ministry of Defence, from the Minister himself, that a similar substance to napalm had been used in the bombardment of Iraq.
A UN convention signed by the US had banned napalm. Is MK-77 very different?
No, it isn't. It has exactly the same effect when it is fired at people. It burns them, it destroys things, it melts bodies. It's exactly the same effect. And what is in a name if it does this to people? I think the Americans are wrong to use it. I think my government are wrong to help in the cover-up of it being used. But, of course, in this war, we've seen the United Nations Charter broken and defied over and over again.
Why didn't the United States ever sign the convention abolishing these weapons?
Well, the United States, of course, do that. They go around lecturing the rest of the world on their rights and responsibilities and have taken note of what the UN said. Of course, they had a lot to say to the Iraqi government about obeying United Nations resolutions. They themselves think they are above it.
This war started with the intention to look for weapons of mass destruction. Is it not paradoxical that chemical weapons were in the end used by the United States?
Absolutely. The hypocrisy is absolutely stinking. There were no weapons of mass destruction. This was a broken-back dictator who was a threat to no one. And the Americans wanted to control the oil in the region. But I'm afraid there is no hiding place from America and Britain in this war. The facts will come out, and Bush and my Prime Minister will be exposed.
Carter. Range auto. All right, got auto range on it.
Roger.
Yeah, Roger, engaging. Got him. Good. Second one. Hit the other one.
Scenes from Fallujah, the hidden massacre, from Rai TV in Italy, the state broadcaster. Here to discuss the chemical weapons allegations, we will be joined by the Pentagon, by the U.S. former soldier who is making the allegations of white phosphorus used in Fallujah, and we'll also be joined by the Italian television producer of the broadcast. This is Democracy Now! Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We've just aired the North American exclusive broadcast of the Italian state broadcaster Rai, that today, on this first anniversary of the siege of Fallujah, broadcast this documentary. It is called Fallujah, the Hidden Massacre. Here to discuss chemical weapons allegations, we're joined on the telephone by Maurizio Torrialta. He is news editor for the Italian state broadcaster Rai, co-producer of this documentary. He joins us from Italy. Jeff Engelhardt is with us. He served as an Army specialist in Iraq in Fallujah, interviewed in the film. He is joining us from Colorado, maintains the weblog Fight to Survive. You can find it at www.ftssoldier.blogspot.com, online with us from Colorado Springs. And on the phone from Baghdad is Lieutenant Colonel Steve Boylan, spokesperson for the U.S. military in Iraq. We welcome you all to Democracy Now! Let us begin with our spokesperson on the phone with us from Iraq, Lieutenant Colonel Steve Boylan of the U.S. military. Your response to the documentary, Fallujah, the Hidden Massacre.
Well, I did not get a chance to view it. I have heard what was played over your program, and I would say for the most part, the elements that I heard for the most part are tantamount to propaganda, falsehoods, and rumors. To address some of that, they're calling white phosphorus an illegal weapon, and that is an error. It is a perfectly legal weapon to use by all conventions of land warfare. The soldier that is stating that it is a chemical weapon and illegal is an error, as is his assertions that elements were waiting for elections and all other types of things about when the attacks were to happen. Again, isn't completely an error, and based on his position, he would not have any knowledge of the decisions that were made at the national strategic level or at the headquarters of multinational forces in Iraq. So again, he is basing his assumptions off of rumor and hearsay.
Lieutenant Colonel Boylan, I just wanted to read you something from Knight Ridder. They're quoting a senior Iraqi defense ministry official who requested anonymity because he wasn't an authorized spokesman. This from Knight Ridder. It says, "We had to stop some operations until the U.S. elections were over. The Iraqi government requested support from the American side in the past, but the Americans were reluctant to launch military operations because they were worried about American public opinion. Now their hands are free." And this was a piece that appeared out of Knight Ridder November 3rd, 2004, with the headline, "Bush expected to move quickly on Iraq," this after the election.
Again, that is an error. I am one of the individuals who sat in on many of these meetings so that we could plan all the events. Media were pre-positioned for quite a while, watching the buildup of our operations preparing to go into Fallujah. We were trying to ensure we had perfect targeting so that we could limit the damage. There was the ability to surround the city to allow no one to escape. It was considered hostile. So again, there are a lot of assertions and hearsay and innuendo that has been used with Fallujah and many other cases propagated by people who have not the complete information and are completely wrong.
So are you confirming that you used white phosphorus in Fallujah but saying that it's simply not illegal?
White phosphorus has been used. I do not recall that it was used as an offensive weapon. White phosphorus is used for marking targets for both air and ground forces. White phosphorus is used to destroy equipment and other types of things. It is used to destroy weapons caches, and it is used to produce a white smoke, which can obscure the enemy's vision of what we are doing.
And you're using it in Iraq?
We have used it in the past. It is a perfectly legal weapon to use.
Maurizio Torrialta, news editor for the Italian state broadcaster RAI 24. Your response?
Well, the United States, as the UK and Italy, signed a convention about prohibition of chemical weapons. And the convention defined precisely that what make forbidden an agent, a chemical agent, is not the chemical agent itself, because as Lieutenant said, the white phosphorus can be used to light the scene of a battle, and in that case it's acceptable. But what make a chemical agent forbidden is the use that is done with it. If you use a white phosphorus to kill the people, to burn, and to block them, people and animals, even animals, say the convention that we all sign, Italy, United States, and UK, this is a forbidden chemical agent. And we are full of pictures that show bodies of young people, of children, of women, which have a strange particular. They are dead with a big corruption of the skin and show even the bone, and the clothes are intact, untouched. And that shows that has been an aggressive agent like white phosphorus that has done that. And we have all the number of those body and the place where they have been buried. So any international organization that wanted to inquire about that has all the tools and the information to do it. And even the witness, the military, the U.S. military that we interview, he confirmed that the use of white phosphorus was against the population. And we have even picture of the fact that it has been thrown by the helicopter down to the city, not by the ground up in the air to light the scene. Also, the images, they spoke by themselves.
Jeff Engelhardt, you are the specialist, former U.S. specialist in the Army, member now speaking out against the war. You are interviewed in this documentary explaining how white phosphorus was used in Fallujah. Can you tell us more?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely heard it being called for, and I even talked to reconnaissance scouts after the siege, and they said they had actually called for it. The Pentagon spokesperson says that they use it for, you know, concealment, or some sources say they use it for illumination, but, I mean, I think that's ridiculous because we would use, just based off my training as a reconnaissance scout myself, we would use illumination separately as its own exclusive round. Since my training, we were taught that white phosphorus is used for troops out in the open or to destroy equipment and that it burns. And that the only way to prevent the burning is to douse it with wet mud. I mean, it's just, to me, it's definitely a chemical weapon in the fact that it burns, and it burns indiscriminately. And in fact, the use of white phosphorus violates Geneva Protocol for the prohibition of use in war of asphyxiating, poisonous or other gases, and bacterial methods of warfare. So, I mean, even if the Geneva Protocol says it's illegal, I don't see how we're able to use it and then say that it's used for our own cover or illumination when it actually could hurt our own troops. So I just think that from the very top, the big problem with this war is that from the very top to the lowest level soldier, everyone's being lied to, and then the news gets gentrified by mass media to make it sound like, oh, well, white phosphorus is a good weapon that we can use to help spot targets, when it's actually designed to burn its victims.
Lieutenant Colonel Boylan in Baghdad, your response.
Well, part of what he was saying was fading in and out, so I'm not clear on everything he said. But again, I would assert that it is a legal weapon to use. It is not considered a chemical weapon as chemical weapons are described today. And again, he is, again, in error, and I would stack up my 21 years of training in the military versus his and what his profession is now. All of our chemical weapons have been declared to the Organization for Prohibition of Chemical Weapons are being destroyed in the United States in accordance with our obligations under the Chemical Weapons Convention. So he, again, is in error that it is considered a chemical weapon, as are all other individuals asserting that fact.
I wanted to read to you from the Geneva Convention on Certain Conventional Weapons, Protocol 3. Protocol on prohibitions or restrictions on the use of incendiary weapons. Geneva, October 10, 1980, Article 1, definitions for the purpose of this protocol. 1. Incendiary weapon means any weapon or munition which is primarily designed to set fire to objects or to cause burn injury to persons through the action of flame, heat, or combination thereof, produced by a chemical reaction of a substance delivered on the target. A incendiary weapons can take the form of, for example, flamethrowers, fugasses, shells, rockets, grenades, mines, bombs, and other containers of incendiary substances. Lieutenant Colonel Boylan.
I know of no cases where people were deliberately targeted by the use of white phosphorus. Again, I did not say white phosphorus was used for illumination. White phosphorus is used for obscuration, which white phosphorus produces a heavy, thick smoke to shield us or them from view so that they cannot see what we are doing. It is used to destroy equipment, to destroy buildings. That is what white phosphorus shells are used for.
Jeff Engelhardt, you were a soldier in Fallujah. Your response?
Well, based off where I was at, I wasn't actually involved in direct combat. I was in a, it's called a TAC, tactical attack center. Basically, I was danger close, which means 200 meters from a lot of the explosions that were happening. And when we'd hear the call for Willie Pete or Whiskey Pete, white phosphorus, huge explosions would hit targets. I just can't conceive how he could say that a white cloud would conceal our troop movement. It's obviously a toxic gas that when it touches skin, it will burn. It will cause third-degree burns to the bone. So I just don't understand where he's coming up with this assertion. It's a hypocrisy, if you ask me.
Lieutenant Colonel Boylan, though you've just listened to the excerpt of the documentary, you haven't seen the images. They are extremely graphic. The images of clothes that are still intact, but the faces burned off, the skin, the arms. These are images of Fallujah.
That can happen from numerous ways, and not just from white phosphorus attacks. That can happen from massive explosions. If you look at the car bombs that the terrorists use today, you have the same effects from car bombs, from suicide vests. I have personally witnessed these things here in Baghdad. So, you know, to say definitively that it was due to a white phosphorus attack is not supported by anyone that I know of, nor do you probably have any forensic evidence, nor does the producer of the show have that as well.
Maurizio Torrialta. Let's ask the Italian editor of the state broadcaster Rai that did this documentary, Maurizio Torrialta.
Yeah, you can see all what I'm talking about in our website, rainews24.it, and I suggest the lieutenant to get a look to the streaming of our transmission. You know, we started our research because we saw that strange picture that showed people dressed and burned, but the dress were not touched by any chemical aggression, and that make it impossible to have a comparison between explosion and other kind of explosion where everything is burned, completely burned, and those pictures were very different, very difficult to be analyzed, and that's why we started to work on those pictures, because they show clearly that was a chemical agent that was aggressive against the skin and all of the part of the skin that was connected with water. And I think the soldier that is connected in your transmission can explain that very well, as he did it to us.
Lieutenant Colonel Steve Boylan, the various newspapers around the world are reporting on this Rai documentary that we've aired an excerpt of today. Again, Rai 24, the Italian state broadcaster's 24-hour news channel, saying phosphorus burns bodies. In fact, it melts the flesh all the way down to the bone. Quoting from the documentary, "I saw the burned bodies of women and children. Phosphorus explodes and forms a cloud. Anyone within a radius of 150 meters is done for." And what we watch through this documentary are the color close-ups of Fallujah residents, some still in their beds, again, clothes remaining largely intact, but skin dissolved or caramelized or turned the consistency of leather by the shells. Also, a biologist is interviewed in this documentary named Mohammed Tarek, who says a rain or fire fell on the city. The people struck by this multicolored substance started to burn. We found people dead with strange wounds. The bodies burned, but the clothes intact.
Well, I would still say that, one, I have not viewed the documentary, so I can't comment on that, and I cannot comment on as far as the visuals, and I cannot comment as far as when those pictures were taken. During the time of the fall attacks in Fallujah, the city was sealed off. It was a massive fight between for the most part, the U.S. Marines and the insurgents. They had booby-trapped massive areas of the city. In fact, many of the networks have aired the footage showing how the detonations happened from the booby traps of IEDs throughout the cities.
Would that explain why perhaps white phosphorus was used in this way?
precision-guided munitions were used on specific targets throughout the campaign in Fallujah in order to destroy those types of targets. There were over 100 journalists that were part of the embedded program with the Marine Expeditionary Force in Fallujah that reported daily on what was occurring. So I find it very unique that only one station out of the entire group of people or media outlets that are seeming to have this story.
We also interviewed a reporter who was actually unembedded last year who reported these stories. But Maurizio Torrialto of RAI 24, your response?
Well, that is a serious problem for information. The fact that you got only information that are controlled. When you are embedded, you must sign an agreement that obliges you to accept the fact that you are not going to give out information that could jeopardize or make difficulties for the army you are embedded with. So that is a serious problem, that the truth is not coming out from 100 of journalists staying only from one side of the fight.
Well, that's completely an error.
What is it that's an error?
The ground rules that he is describing, those are for future plans, and they cannot divulge what our future plans are. We do not screen, censor, or look at any journalist's work prior to their release. They are also not allowed to release classified information. But on their reporting after the fact or as it happens live, there is no censorship, screening, or prevention of what they cover. And I think that is fairly clear from the coverage that people have seen where there have been events that have not been too flattering of our forces have been aired.
Maurizio Torrialto.
Lieutenant, do you deny that all embedded journalists sign an agreement in which they take responsibility for not jeopardizing in any way with the information that they will deliver the life of the people they are with?
Only as it applies to future operations. For example, we would not allow them to broadcast what time and location and routes we are taking for a morning for the next day's attack. That would be in consideration of not jeopardizing the soldiers' lives as well as their own. But as it happens, they have been, and I think everybody has seen throughout since the operations commenced in 2003, live coverage of what happens as it happens.
Do you think that the SOS 100 journalists were in the front line, were very close to the battle during the night when we had when we got the video of the white phosphorus agent that was thrown down on the city? Do you think that those other journalists were over there, be able to document all that?
There were journalists all over. As I watched many of the networks that I was able to see, I saw live footage covering many different aspects of the battlefield from the very front to the rear. And at night, you could see anything like that from a great distance. So I question the validity of many of the things that I've heard.
Jeff Engelhardt, you are a former U.S. soldier. You were there at the battle. What is your response to the lack of coverage, since you contend that white phosphorus was used as a chemical weapon?
Well, I guess it's really my word against his. I know for a fact I heard it being called for on the radio. As far as media control, though, I know for a fact that if a journalist released a story that our task force wasn't happy with, that journalist just wasn't invited back. And you have to look at it from the point of being a freelance journalist in Iraq where you're not getting protection. Of course, you're going to come out with a story that's more accurate. But, you know, when we had reporters from CNN, mostly CNN or the Army Times, they were protected. They were concealed in armored Humvees, protected by soldiers. And it just seemed that they always told the Army side of the story. in return for that protection. So, I mean, there's definitely a media control going on in Iraq. There's just no doubt about it. And for him to say that they don't censor any stories coming out, I don't doubt that they don't censor them. I just think that if they don't like a story, they just don't invite the reporter back.
Well, on that note, we're going to have to wrap up this discussion. I want to thank you, Jeff Engelhardt, for joining us, former specialist in the U.S. Army, runs the blogspot Fight to Survive. That's www.ftssoldier.blogspot.com. Also want to thank Lieutenant Colonel Boylan for joining us, Steve Boylan, spokesperson for the U.S. military, speaking to us from Baghdad, and Maurizio Torrealta, news editor for Italian television network Rai 24, the Italian state broadcaster. Their documentary is airing today throughout Italy, called Fallujah, The Hidden Massacre. And you can go to our website for contact information and to see the excerpts. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We'll be back in a minute. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we move from Iraq to another major story making headlines this week, 1 week ago, The Washington Post revealed the existence of a secret Soviet-era prison used by the CIA to detain prisoners in Eastern Europe. The prison, part of a small global network of secret CIA and military compounds used to detain and interrogate prisoners, including the Guantanamo Bay prison in Cuba. During a stop in Panama, President Bush was asked about the secret prison. At the request of U.S. officials, the Washington Post did not disclose the location of the Eastern European prison. Human Rights Watch says it's likely Poland or Romania, based on records the group obtained of military flights from Afghanistan. Officials from both Poland and Romania have denied the allegations. The Washington Post declined to come on the program to discuss its decision to comply with the Pentagon's demand they not name the countries that have the prisons. Instead, a spokesperson referred us to a statement by the executive editor Len Downey on CNN last Thursday, in which Downey said, quote, "In this case, we agreed to keep the names of those particular countries out because we were told, and it seems reasonable to us, that there could be terrorist retaliation against those countries, or more importantly, disruption of other very important intelligence activities, anti-terrorist activities," unquote. The Washington Post has drawn criticism for acquiescing to the government's demand. Commenting on the Post's rationale, the media watch group FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, said, quote, "The possibility that illegal, unpopular government actions might be disrupted is not a consequence to be feared. However, it's the whole point of the First Amendment," they wrote. Well, joining us in our Washington, D.C. studio is Peter Kornbluh, senior analyst at the National Security Archive, a public interest documentation center in Washington. Your response to the Washington Post decision to comply with the Pentagon's demand they not name the countries where the secret prisons are?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to give the Washington Post and the reporter, Donna Priest, a great deal of credit for breaking a very, very significant story. This story has the potential, truly, to enhance the debate and really accelerate the debate over whether we should be involved in torturing and secretly detaining prisoners in the war on terrorism. But the Post obviously capitulated to kind of suspect arguments by very high U.S. Officials. In so doing, really, I think that the Post bears a responsibility for the continuation of these abuses that we know have taken place in the past and are clear, probably are taking place in the present. These arguments are suspect about attacks on these several Eastern European countries, which probably include Romania and Poland. But I think the bottom line is that the CIA fears that if the names of these countries are published, the people in those countries, Eastern Europeans who have, you know, pushed away from the gulags of the past and are trying to rebuild democracies in the present, will say, hey, this is not what we want in our countries. And this is exactly what happened with the CIA detention center in Thailand. When it was revealed the CIA was running a secret center in the war on terrorism in Thailand, the Thai government said, we want to be able to deny that we have such a detention center here, and you have to shut it down. And that is what the CIA is truly worried about, is losing its ability to sustain these facilities.
Peter Kornbluh, you say this is the most egregious censorship of a paper in decades, going back to the Bay of Pigs. Can you explain?
Well, there are many examples, and there are many that we don't even know about, of the U.S. government stepping in with very high executives of the New York Times and the Washington Post and the New Republic and other newspapers and media outlets across the country and saying, please don't run this story because it will compromise our national security interests. And the most famous is in 1961 when the New York Times was going to run a story on the pending invasion at the Bay of Pigs in Cuba. And John Kennedy picked up the phone and called the publisher of the New York Times and said, please don't run this story. The Times did run the story, but they whittled it down significantly, eliminating exactly those types of details, when, where, who, how many, etc. Afterwards, of course, the president and his advisors said they wished that the Times had run the full story so that the invasion, which failed, would have been aborted. But you have a similar situation here in terms of the magnitude of this issue, but the arguments are different. In this case, we don't have U.S. soldiers whose lives are on the line. We basically have a situation where our immediate security is not compromised and where one has to evaluate whether the security of these actual countries truly is compromised. And I think if, you know, the presidents of Romania and Poland had picked up the phone and called the Washington Post and said, we know this is a secret operation, we are worried about it being published, then perhaps, you know, you could have had an argument that there was an issue here. But to simply buy into this presentation by high Pentagon, CIA, and White House officials that our national security is at stake in keeping the locations of these secret detention centers secret, I think is wrong. What is at stake is these secret detention centers. And the Romanians, the Poles, and other Eastern European citizens have been building a civil society focused on the abuses of the past, museums, monuments, efforts to say, you know, never again. And here the poetic, you know, irony is that the CIA appears to be using actually Soviet gulags that were in place in these countries when the Soviet Union was running them.
Peter Kornbluh, I want to thank you for being with us, senior analyst at the National Security Archive, author of The Pinochet File, a declassified dossier on atrocity and accountability. And that does it for today's broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdokadoush, John Hamilton, Anna Nagara, Elizabeth Press, Yoruba Richin, Maddie Harper, Aaron Mate, Susie Salami. Mike DeFilippo is our engineer. For all video and photos and the video and audio of the broadcast, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. We are podcasting in video and audio there, as well as transcript and links to all of our guests. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Democracy Now!